Hello, this is Gary Miller, President of the University of Akron. We're honored to have you listen to our podcast series, Diverse Engineering, which is made possible thanks to the generous support of our gold sponsors, GPD Group and Continental Contitech. The University of Akron and our community partners are committed to the success of students from around the world and in our own backyard. We're especially proud of the contributions and successes that have resulted from the hard work, determination, and dedication of our students of color. Please enjoy our podcast.
Welcome to Diverse Engineering, a podcast that features the amazing talents and contributions of underrepresented alumni and faculty from the College of Engineering and Polymer Science at the University of Akron. You will hear about their stories and their journeys as engineers, researchers, entrepreneurs, and minorities in their fields. We are ending our podcast with season 3 and would agree that it has been an interesting ride. But in a fun twist, we decided that we wanted to end our series by featuring our podcast host, Ebony Bond, for one final farewell. Ebony has been the voice of our podcast through 19 episodes, and today will be our special guest for this podcast titled Curious by Design. Here's what you should know about Ebony Bond. Ms. Ebony Bond is a creative communicator, customer development, and startup consultant, and currently contracts as a program manager at the Entrepreneurship Education Consortium, where she helps with program strategy and implementation. Recently, Ebony received the 2022 University of Akron 5 Under 35 Award, made the front page of the Akron Beacon Journal as a changemaker, graduated as a fellow from the Futuro Media Group's Podcast Lab for Journalists, received the Women's Network Impacting Change Award, and the 2020 Greater Akron Chamber's 30 for the Future Award. In addition to hosting the Diverse Engineering podcast, public speaking, and performing poetry, Ebony assists entrepreneurs and organizations with leveraging the voice of the customer to discover problem-solution fit and finding and articulating value propositions that align with the specific markets. She also helps tech startups and small businesses with learning fundamental business concepts and helping them to prepare investor pitch decks. Ebony earned a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering in 2018 and a Certificate in Professional Sales Engineering from the notable University of Akron. I have admired Ebony's intellect, creativity, and out-of-the-box thinking for a very long time, and I'm excited to have this honor to interview her today. Thank you, Ebony, for joining us for one last farewell episode. You do realize how honored I am to be able to be with you.
One, thank you. I was not expecting this, but I truly appreciate it, and I'm honored, honestly.
Well, I'm excited for today and to see where this conversation takes us. Let's start by talking a little bit about what led you on the current journey that you're on in life, and when you look back at your childhood, can you talk a little bit about any signs that you were destined to become a mechanical engineer and then move on to what you're doing now?
So about my journey, well, first, even on this journey of the podcast, I just want to invite Spirit to be with me and to guide me in my answers, because I think when you have a question, there's so many directions that you can go. So I'm just going to trust that, you know, I'll give what needs to be given. But as far as any telltale signs, I think I just had an interest in science and math. I think that I was always good at them. Being able to figure things out. I remember being in middle school, and I think it was a paper that I'd written, and it just wasn't good enough. But I didn't like that you couldn't really know why. I felt like I was being judged on my creativity and not the structure. Like, check my grammar and my paragraphs and, you know, my format. I got that right. But, like, I can't give you more than what I have, and I didn't know how to be better at it. And so I think also because of that, it pushed me more to, well, I like science and math because I know how to get the answer right. I can figure it out. And so interest in science and math. And then also, you know, there's a joke that, like, you know, engineers, like, we might not be able to write well or spell well. And I think that's, you know, probably a sign also that I was probably like on the path to be an engineer, because I did not want to write any papers or anything like that. I think curiosity was probably like a sign that I, you know, would have gone the engineering route, kind of like that figure it out or understanding, like being like having like a puzzle or a problem solver, you know, type brain. So I think those are probably some of the signs, maybe, if I had to point some out, like why engineering might have been a path that I chose.
I think a lot of people talk about that they took things apart or played with Legos or
that's not my story. Not at all.
So share a little bit about your experiences in college. You know, you've graduated high school, you're heading off to college. And specifically, I'm just interested in your experiences as a very powerful, intelligent woman, but in a field of all men, and specifically white men, at the time. So talk a little bit about that.
To strip it down, so like even in high school, I remember like the calculus teacher asking everybody what they're going to do after school. And I have no freaking clue. Like I had no guidance on that, you know, at all. And I remember like, you know, telling her, no clue. After class, she pulled me aside, like as everyone left, and said, you know, well, you like science and you like math and you're good at both. You should be an engineer. And I was like, I don't want to be a train conductor. She was like, silly, that's not what engineers do. Like, I had no idea what an engineer was. In my head, it was the little man that was on the little I think I can train. Like, you know, so like, you know, after learning more about what they did and just knowing that science and math were the skills that you needed, like, I'm like, oh, that definitely is a path for me. But I remember when I, like, came to school and I realized, like, I was in class with a lot of people who had, like, built computers before, like, built little robots and, you know, knew this and, you know, had practical experiences with engineering. I definitely felt behind or, like, different. And then also just not having, I don't remember having another, like, black woman in my, like, tools class or anything like that.
You probably didn't.
Yeah, I don't think I did. No, especially because I was computer engineering at that time. Electrical engineering.
Definitely, yeah.
I don't think. No, because I think by the time I came electrical engineering, I was going to be like the first one to graduate since like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that. And so I remember feeling a little different because of that, but also because I did not come. How I grew up was not in proximity to whiteness. And so I was very aware that I was the type of black person that also was a little even further removed from, you know, what my experiences were in college. And I think I took that a little bit more in my belief system. Like it affected kind of like how I view myself, knowing the differences. So I went to school, went to work, and I went home. And then when I dropped out and I came back, that's when my experience changed.
Okay.
So then I started, you know, going to professors' office hours. I came across ideas with Dr. Julie and Nesby, and that completely changed my experience in school.
So Nesby is National Society of Black Engineers, and Ideas is a program at the university for increasing diversity in engineering as
academics.
Well.
But I think being insulated by, like, you know, black people and having that support definitely changed the game for me in school. Engaging with my professors and office hours and all that changed my experiences. In fact, so the question was about, like, you know, my experiences as a woman, but I think also you probably meet as a black woman. I had a professor who I interviewed and is the first podcast of this season. I remember going to his office hours, asking questions about homework or something again. He said, you know, how do I say this? I realize I have a lot of non-white people in my class, probably the most that I've had. And how can I get you guys to be more engaged? Like, you don't really engage class. So I think he encouraged me I don't remember how it happened, but to set up like study sessions. And so I, you know, emailed or reached out to everybody in Ideas. and say, hey, you know, we have this heat transfer class. Like, he's willing to meet with us once a week to go over any, like, homework questions or allow us to ask questions that we might not feel that comfortable. You know, give us that space to be, quote, unquote, you know, stupid, not just because we're Black, but just humans in general. We don't like to be, you know, stupid.
Right, right.
And when you add that layer of being stupid in a room full of white people, it might be a different, you know, level of pressure. And so, yeah, so I had, you know, support from professors. I had challenging professors for sure. I had a professor who, there was a test he had given us, and about 40 minutes into the test, he realized he gave us an insolvable problem. And so
the number of times that happens.
Well, it was the first time it happened to me. I'm just like, wow, this is already stressful enough, like getting prepared for a test. And then his test, because people know he's like the most challenging professor.
Right.
And so it became a take-home test. And so not only did it become, like, it became a take-home MATLAB test on top of that. And so I remember just working so hard to write the most beautiful code and to, like, set these variables up in the most, like, neat and organized way and to really, like, solve this problem in such a beautiful way in MATLAB. And I didn't even know MATLAB. So on top of that, like, I'm doing a double test, honestly. And I laid that thing out so beautifully for people to never get A's in this class. I got 100%.
Wow.
100%.
That's amazing.
And he knocked me off 10 points because I scribbled out the first page. That was his incorrect test. And he said, and I said, what? Why did I get to, you know, points off on this? And he said, because I scribbled it out and it was unprofessional. Well, nowhere in the syllabus did it say I was being great on professionalism. In fact, this is not a professional environment. It's an academic environment.
Right.
And this is not in the syllabus. Like, I was not warned that I would be taken off for scribbling out your incorrect answer. I was so furious. But also realized, like, he probably couldn't have a Black woman getting 100% on his test. He's got to find a way to, like, you know, his tests are so hard. There's no way. Like, and so having that being, like, one of my first experience, like, experiences, direct experiences, I'm sure it's probably happened before, but realizing, like, people are going to change rules, and people can change rules, you know, if it means that you don't get to win.
Especially in the power position, which in that case, he's in the power position, right? So you have to kind of take your lumps on that one.
I literally, like, I wasn't afraid to show my emotion because I realized there was nothing I could do. And so I remember just at that moment, like, I just stopped talking to him and put myself in my book bag and just tears started flowing. Like, but also, you know, I realized, like, I earned the 100%. That's something you can never take from. I laid that code out beautifully.
You know.
Yeah. Am I going to not get an A because of this? Yes, because there's only a couple tests in the class. So this is going to wait on my grade and it's going to show up on my transcript and it's going to be affected because of it. But I know I got 100% on a professor that people struggle to get C's in. And so, like, and that's something, you know, that could, you know, never be taken from me. Thank God that was my perspective on it. But I'd say, you know, my experiences, I look more on the positive experiences that I had because I had a lot more positive experiences and professors who I know were rooting for me. I can remember we were talking offline about, you know, maybe having a professor not pick on you because they underestimate you. But I also had basics of electrical engineering, which I think mechanicals kind of struggle with that. And I got 100% on one of his tests. And it was a, you know, one of those auditorium classrooms. So it was
around
100
students. Were always big.
Yeah. And he called my name and somebody else's name and said, hey, I need Ebony Bond and so-and-so else to stand up. And I had no idea why he was calling me out. And he said, hey, you know, to auditorium of at least 150 students, like, hey, you were looking at the two people in the class who got 100% on the test.
That's amazing.
I think he very intentionally did that to show this also is what 100% looks like.
Right.
So I was very appreciative of, you know, of that experience. I never cared for people to know I got, you know, A's or, you know, how I was in class. But I appreciated those moments where they took the time to also showcase that this is also what 100% looks like.
Yeah, that's a fantastic story.
Yeah, I have good 100% stories and bad 100% stories.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep it 100.
I have some 13% stories.
Oh, I don't have
those. I think that was the lowest grade I ever got on anything. So, yeah, dang. I admire anybody who got 100. I think probably in my whole engineering career, I had one 100 the entire time I went to school. It just didn't happen.
Dang.
You know, so I think that's amazing. And it's a great story.
Thank you.
So moving on from that, talk a little bit about what you value in others. Do you value the same in others? Do you look for other qualities that are equally important to you?
I think as someone who is governed by authenticity, or whose personality does best when they're able to be authentic, I would actually say I didn't always know myself. I lost myself at some point, and I was doing all these personality tests trying to figure out more about myself. And one of them said, like, authenticity is how you make decisions. And, like, being able to make quick decisions is a superpower, and I didn't have that. And so I'm like, okay, well, if I want to be better at making decisions, I have to figure out more about me and be more authentic. And so I went through these like value exercises, like, you can live more authentically if you make decisions based on your values. And I'm like, well, what the heck do I value? Like, I gotta figure this out. And so, like, one of the things was like, well, you can kind of tell what you value by like what really pisses you off. And so what I value is honesty, because, like, I really, like, get frustrated when people are dishonest. I value now self-awareness.
Okay.
Like, when people can be self-aware. And I value humanity, the humanity in people, and when people can have humility as well. What do I admire? Like, in that way, like, valuing others that I wish I had more of. Like, what do I look at people in awe? It's just, like, tenacity and people's ability to just get things done. So, like, I know that about you. Like, you're going to work to get things done. Like, if
well,
the time
you.
Is for sure. The time is, like, you know, you're supposed to get off at 5 and it's 6 and you're still not going to – it's not going to be done until 8 or 9. Like, you're going to stay to 8 or 9. I am crawling to 5. And it's just how my human does it. And so, like, I'm like, I just thank God I made it to 5. And so, like, I admire people who I don't know if it's, like, emotions getting away or, like, you know, whatever it is, but I admire that in people to just be able to, like, keep going. They don't stop when they're done. They stop when it's done.
Yeah. I do think, though, that you have that quality, because I listen to how you speak about your creative side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're with everybody, right? It takes passion to be that invested in something. And I think, you know, yeah, you might feel you're crawling till 5 because you're not doing something necessarily.
I'm crawling and crying. Like, even though I got those, like, you know, like, ended up doing really well in school after I came back, like, that was not without a lot of tears.
Yeah.
And, like, people knew, like, Ebony's going to probably be the last one here because I need to, like, winning. I like winning being a part of my identity.
Yeah.
So in that way, I will work hard, but, like, there has to be something in front of me to work toward. And I feel like you will still find ways to work toward something.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, you and I have a lot of similarities and then also have a lot of differences too. And I love that about our relationship. I think it's awesome. So you've had a lot of people in your life that have been a part of your life and have offered support. You mentioned some professors that, you know, have helped you. I like the idea of, you know, when you have a lot of questions, sometimes it is very difficult to ask the questions, especially in front of other people, because you don't want to look stupid. And I was thinking about the professor that you had approached you and kind of gave you that freedom by allowing you to have a safe space to ask questions. And I think that's amazing, because most people don't, you know, they don't get that. And it's something I think all people need, because how many times do you see everybody itching to ask a question, but nobody wants to ask it because
they feel like they should know it.
Right. They feel like they should know it, but they don't. And yet when they ask the question, everybody around says, oh, thank goodness.
Right.
They may not say it to your face, but they're thinking it. You know, you're the person who said it out loud. So tell me about, you know, in those instances, what is the best advice that somebody has ever given you? And who gave you that advice? And do you give advice? Do you offer guidance now to other people based on the experiences that you've received?
So the best advice is kind of hard because I feel like good advice is sometimes dependent on like the context of the situation. So like if somebody said, this is my situation, I could say, here's the best advice that I received in regards to that.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. So when you ask me that, it's hard. But to like kind of reflect on something maybe recently that I told people, and I will say some of the best advice that sticks out right now was from my mom. And one of them, she said, like, if you're scared, do it scared.
Aww.
And
that is such good advice.
Like, if you're scared, do it scared. And then the other one was, Ebony, all it takes is 5 seconds of courage. And so,
I
like,
I love that.
I even applied that, like, in the school setting, because after I had come back to school, I was so severely depressed and working a 45-hour job and living 30, 40 minutes away on top of that and going to school full time. I didn't have time to like do the work or brush up on the skills I lost because I dropped out. And
I think a lot of people don't realize how many students are living that life. I mean,
so
just, you know,
overwhelming.
Tired. Overwhelming. Yes, exactly.
Overwhelming. And I don't think I didn't know how to cope with that at all. So I was just so depressed. I remember coming to school and I would pull up and I just couldn't even get out the car. So I'd be here on time for class and would just sit in the garage during the whole time.
Aww.
You know, period. And so like,
you're not the first person either that I've heard that. And
no.
I think it's incredible.
No, mental health is like a thing, especially I think the pressure of engineering. Like they tell you, they don't advise you to have a job and like you need to have a job.
Right.
And then like the workload itself, like we look out the window and see kids playing soccer and we're like, dang, I bet they're an English major or something. Like, and it's no knock to English majors
right.
at all. I think
it's
there's
just
so much
different.
More value.
The work is different.
So much more value probably in studying English anyways, but like the workload is different. And so it's just so overwhelming. And because of that semester I got a zero. I got called to come back to school and then got a 0.0 GPA. Know, major blow to my ego or identity because I just always identified as being a good student.
Right.
And so because of that 0.0 GPA that semester, my overall GPA significantly went down. And I'm a person, I like to win. I like to do well. If I'm
right.
going to go for something, I don't want to go for, I want to go for the best. And so I was told like, I shouldn't waste my time at the bigger companies because they require a 3.0 GPA. And that really discouraged me for going to the career fair. So then at the school, so then when NSBE's career fair came around, I told myself I was not going to let that stop me.
Okay.
You know, even though I had a 2.7 GPA at the time, I'm going to go for the 3.0 companies. And I'm not going to take the advice that I should put my GPA on my resume.
Right.
If they like me, they're going to have to find that out.
Right,
no, I'm
right.
not telling it to them. And so I remember before walking in the career fair saying like, okay, I mean, you have all these doubts about yourselves and you have these insecurities and you know you don't meet the requirements for what you're going for. But all you need is 5 seconds of courage.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah. So I like walked in because after the first 5 seconds, you're already in motion.
Right.
You can't.
You
after
can't
you walked
stop.
Up to them, you did. The hard part is the 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so... Yeah, 5 seconds of courage.
Your mom really summed it up well. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to take the first steps and go. And I think the fact that, you know, resilience is such a big part of the person that you are, right? The fact
that,
you know, you go, you do though. I mean, this is what I see. So
right.
I'm speaking from outside, but, you know, you took a situation, which is devastating. I mean, I've been there. I remember, you know, I was a great student, and then I got my first F in circuits. And we'll mention that.
It's so crushing.
It is crushing. It is soul crushing. But, you know, the big key is how do you get up and how do you keep going and what do you change in whatever you were doing, because obviously didn't work the first time. And, you know, seeing, hearing your story about going to the, or not going to the first career fair on campus because you were, you know.
I walked in and walked out.
Right. You were worried about what you were doing. And that right away was a no from every person coming to the career fair, right? Because you never tried.
Yep.
But then turning that around and just deciding that, okay, it's not going to define who you are. Mm-hmm. It's such a big moment, actually, to mm-hmm. and then just to have the courage, like you said, walk in and just start and try.
Do it scared.
Yeah, do it scared. Because I love that.
The world literally communicates to you all day long about why you should not like yourself.
Yeah.
Just all day long. And so, like, I love that for younger Ebony that she did that. For sure. And I'd say also, like, you know, say, like, ask for spirit to lead me. There's probably answers that should come out of questions. But also, like, outside of even the College of Engineering, the Excel Center, the Experiential Learning Center, and Dr. Berriman and Anu Vias, for sure, support. I think there's, you know, I think the university is an interesting place because a lot of people take jobs at universities because they want to help people.
Right.
Like, and they want to help you succeed. And they want to help the future of, you know, society. And they want to help people become what they could become.
Yes.
And so it's just generally, to me, have been a supportive environment. So I wanted to say that also.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you, I even think when you leave the university, sometimes it has been so supportive. And you don't get exposed to some things until you branch out and go out and start, you know, looking for your first job or do those kinds of things. Go to your first career fair, right?
Yeah.
And you realize, like, yeah, okay, it was really good at the university.
That is a culture shock for sure. And there needs to be a class on that, period. Especially because of the way that you're educated at the university. You learn so much more about the world and how it's set up, and you see very clearly what the problems are, and you want to work to, you know, be a part of that solution. And hello, who did you think you? It's just so crazy, like you know what you believe. Like, yes, you want to change the world, but it's been this way for so long. Do you think this not been this way because nobody else has wanted to change it? There's resistance.
Well, you know, I do believe that people can change.
Yeah.
The world, it may be in small ways. Well, anyway, I want to pivot a little bit. I personally find you to be extremely creative. I love when you talk about the things that you do outside of engineering, the engineering world. I want to know a little bit about what is the role of creativity in your daily life.
Mm-hmm. So I think based on one of those personality tests that I take, which I highly recommend everybody to check out, viacharacter.org. It's a values or a character trait test. And the premise is that, like, your strengths, like how you're going to behave is going to come out of what you value. And so I was just like, okay, wanting to learn more about my values so I could operate more authentically. I was like, I need to take this values test because I need to find out more about me. And so the top value for me was creativity. And the way that they defined creativity was there's big C creativity and there's little C creativity. And big C is what people normally think of as creative. That may be your people who paint or who are involved in the arts, or that might be the poetry or music or, you know, things like that. Things that society doesn't necessarily value that much as far as
I love creative people. I wish I was more so.
The classes that they want to cut in schools.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. But then there's also your little C creativity, and that's your problem solving. So that might be more like, so I think the big C creativity for me for sure is like the poetry or like ironically words as an engineer who's like not good at words, I guess. but the art of putting words together, poetry, big C for me. And then little C for me, the problem solving side, that is also being creative. And those words could be interchangeable. I'm a problem solver, I'm a creative. And so the building things as I go, and adopting that more as a mindset, like you have to, if creativity is something you value, you also have to get comfortable with like you're building it as you go. You're just trying to do one thing at a time. The figure it out piece, that little C creativity for sure. Like I'm going to, you know, try to figure things out. And then, I would also say like my affinity for strategy, I would say, like,
okay,
strategizing. I think that's how those things show up in my like day-to-day life.
So when you're working on something or getting into that creative mindset, I mean, do you use it for a certain purpose? Like, do you mm-hmm. use it because you need to cope with something? Mm-hmm. Do you use it with no outcome in mind?
Right.
You know, do you use it as an outlet for your ideas? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the purpose of creativity or for all?
Right.
I mean, is it just something that happens and, you know?
So I'm going to talk about the big C creativity. So for me, my like since thinking is one of my strengths, I remember one time somebody said something about TV and I had told them I didn't watch TV. I didn't even own a TV at the time, for like 5 years. And they said, well, what do you do for fun? And I said, I thought about it. And I was like, dang, what do I do for fun? Which is kind of sad also, but like, and I said,
so
well,
no Bachelor in Paradise for you.
No,
I take it.
No. And then when I really thought about it, I said, well, dang, I guess I just think for fun.
Like, that's interesting.
I like to think about things. And so as someone who thinking is a strength, it also ends up being a weakness if you have too many things in your brain. Mm-hmm. And so how I use it as an outlet, so I kind of like use the analogy like, imagine you have two browsers open. You have like Safari and you have Chrome, or you might be Firefox or something else open on your Internet Explorer on your computer. And then in each browser, I have like 5 to 10 windows open. And then in each window, I have like 15 to 22 tabs. And so, you know, when you're operating a computer, when you have that many tabs open, it stops functioning. Or you go to try to retrieve an old tab and it doesn't have the capacity to load that page. So you lost it forever. And so that's how my brain is. Like, I'll be like, I know there's something I'm supposed to be thinking about, or
right,
I know there's something I'm supposed to be doing, but my brain is so overloaded, I don't have the capacity to even pull what that thing is. And so that can be, that's when you get closer to, I get closer to burnout.
Okay.
Or if there's something like that's heavily weighing on me emotionally or something I need to process, something I don't like, I use poetry, specifically words, to try to process things. Or sometimes I'll write, you know, paragraphs, you know, about, you know, my perspective. But a lot of my poetry comes from, I need to offload things out of my brain, or I need to process something, or I know I need a better way of thinking about something. If I can tell that the way I'm thinking about something is negatively affecting me, even if it's true, I need something better to be going on in me. And so I use words as an anchor, as something to hold on to.
Okay.
And so I think about my hopes and identities, and I try to write about the direction I want to go, or, you know, believe about something. And so, yeah, I say in my day-to-day creativity, all of my behavior, like someone tells me to think about something, there are people who are probably going to think about, let me look up best practices. Let me look up, you know, how this has been done before.
Right, right.
My brain never goes there. I'm like, what could be done? What if this? How about this? My brain just naturally does not think best practices, or less, you know, tradition or something like that. Just because it's just how my brain works. Not that I don't see the use in it. Like, I know practically now I need to put that into, you know, what do I do? Like, well, let me research what's out there. But I'm always going to be thinking like, well, what do I think is one of the problems here? Or how can I find a solution to that? Or what if this? So I think creativity is just how my human does it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When we did the interview with Dr. McKenzie, and he spoke about he always asks why. And when since he's been a kid, that's been part of his vocabulary, right?
Same.
It sounds like that's the same way you work. I'm the look up the 10 steps to whatever mm-hmm. first.
And I think that's kind of like the engineering, like the other side of the engineering.
Yeah.
You know, how engineering minds work.
So speaking of that, you know, you are, I consider you kind of a Renaissance woman, right? You're a mechanical engineer. You have a strong interest in science and math. But you're also this poet with your interest in the spoken word, right? Mm-hmm. So,
and innovation.
Which side do you think resonates with you the most?
I think, if anything, I'm a person who just wants to figure out how to enjoy life more. And so that probably is more so the poet side. But
is that in pursuit of happiness? Is that what you're looking for? Or is it something else?
Maybe fulfillment.
Okay.
You know, fulfillment. I think it used to be happiness, but now my understanding of happiness is different. It's one of the emotions, and it's not a, you know, forever thing, but I think there's something more rewarding beyond happiness. And I think it is fulfillment, or being in alignment with your human's design.
Yeah.
That's what I'm striving for. Like, my human is designed a certain way, and I can't should myself a certain way, or this is how I should be. But how can I work with what I am?
That's good. I always wonder, because I think people in general want to be productive, or they want to contribute mm-hmm. in some way. And I do think that's kind of like a fundamental need, which can lead to mm-hmm. happiness for some people. Some mm-hmm. people, they like to be productive, but it is not the end. It's not necessary for them to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, they might like being productive, but then what makes them happy is going on vacation. You know, you're the intersection of so many things, right? You're a mechanical engineer, you're a disruptor, you're Black, you're a woman, a creative, you're curious, you're a connector. Talk about a little bit about the challenges that you faced mm-hmm. in this space, and what your identity means to you.
Mm-hmm. And this, the challenges of these intersectionalities.
Yes.
And so I had to think about this a little bit, because I think people have the idea, and it's not their own original idea, unfortunately. People are not, this has been indoctrinated, so I can't give people ownership for, you know, for that, but people have the like idea that because you're Black, or because you're a woman, and when you're Black and you're a woman, that they are supposed to be smarter than you, they're supposed to be better than you, they're supposed to be more advanced than you, they're supposed to be paid more than you, they're supposed to be listened to more than you, they're supposed mm-hmm. to be all these things more than you, just because they've been taught this on a subconscious level, mm-hmm. whether they actually read a book that, you know, explicitly championed these ideas, or they went through the education system that is the, you know, United States. Even thinking about, you know, history, I'm learning about nothing about the like nothing that was about the experience through anybody who was other than, you know, a white man, honestly. And so when you've been learning all these things, and then if you're challenged in any tables that you're at where there is someone who you're supposed to be all these things more than,
right,
and they come to the table and they are actually offering something that they might not even necessarily have to be smarter than you, or, you know, better than you, or more advanced than you. And they could be, you know, those things, if you want to do the comparison thing.
Right.
I think they just offer something different.
Right.
But it challenges people's sense of worthiness, because mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be better than you, and something must be wrong with me, you know, if I'm not better than this Black girl. And mm-hmm. so And especially Black girl with maybe a little bit of ghetto fabulousness, or you know, or something. I have that or whatever. Maybe I really love Cookie Lyons on Empire, the TV show. But because and so when you challenge people in that way, their defense is to make you feel smaller so that they can get that you know power
right.
back or that
yeah like
you know,
they jockey for position somehow
yeah. yeah and to really validate themselves in mm-hmm. somewhere mm-hmm. like it's out of alignment with anything that might have been in their identity. And so like you can't really it's hard to really shake people's like identity, like they're gonna do whatever to protect their identity
mm-hmm.
and so I think people want to you know, make you small or discredit you or make you question your own intelligence mm-hmm. Or the way that you think about things, and they're going to do whatever. And so that's been, you know, one of, you know, my experiences, and not to integrate the way that people treat me into my identity has been the hardest part.
Man, what you say tells it all, right? The way that you feel, what you experience from day to day, and knowing that anyone around you could be that person that's anonymously commenting on the blackness of Mermaid.
Right.
Right. Right. That's a scary, right. scary thing right. when you think about it. So,
well, their business, not mine.
Before we continue on, I want to thank you for listening to this Diverse Engineering podcast series about the diverse engineering faculty at the University of Akron. My name is Amari Gambrell, and I am able to attend the University of Akron because of the diversity scholarships that I have received. These scholarships, which are offered through the College of Engineering and Polymer Science, make a huge impact in my academic success by reducing my financial need. If you would like to make a difference in an underrepresented engineering graduate student's academic career, please text WIE to 71777 or give online at www.uakron.edu/giving/WIE.
So talk a little bit about how that drives you to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion mm-hmm. Within engineering. What makes it, you know, obviously you've talked a little bit about what makes it important to you. It's personal, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then how do you work in your daily life to promote mm-hmm. that?
It was very personal because what you're really trying to do is what I learned from myself is that I'm really just trying to like protect and defend like my identity or the mm-hmm. intersectionality mm-hmm. of my identity or what I've, you know, fully adopted as, you know, my identity. Now for me, it's less personal and it's more principle. And so if you look at our socioeconomic reality and structure, it is set up so that there's, like I said, there's going to be losers. And like, who are the losers? It's marginalized groups. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I think that now for me, it's so important that whatever room I'm in to look at things through the lens of classism, of racism, of sexism, mm-hmm. of ableism, of elitism. And so like, even like, doing this podcast, if you really think about it, at a university where something like majority of people who even go to college, like you have to be able to afford that thing.
Right.
And
right.
I didn't even know how much. I assume all colleges were like $200,000 a year. Okay. Just, you know, like just not, you just think that it's so expensive and it's so like untouchable. And like, if you have that belief, like you don't even try, right?
Right.
Because my
right,
family
right.
can't afford eggs this
right,
week,
right.
Like, let alone college. And so like, there are so many people who I've met, like, this is going back to the imposter syndrome when I say like I have a little bit of imposter syndrome and guilt about being an engineer, because I am not a practicing engineer. I don't know how to build a thing. And there are people who will make nothing out of something.
Mm-hmm.
They're, I don't know, bathtub starts leaking or whatever, and they will find a way to go rig it. Their lawnmower, it doesn't work. They will find a way to rig it. Their engine in their car isn't doing something right. They'll hook something up. Here's a wire to this, connection to this, and redo something and so that it functions. And they are practically more engineer than I will ever be, but they will never get the opportunity to jump over into a different class.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they can't afford or take the time to go be a student. Or they may not be able to do the math. to get the engineering degree.
Right.
And so when you look at access and opportunity from a socioeconomic perspective, there are people who are significantly disadvantaged and may very well be able to be on this podcast and talk about engineering in a more intimate way than I can. But they can't, because when you look at elitism, you know, higher education institution and classism, you know, maybe they can't even be able to afford to take the time or monetarily to be able to do that thing. Those are perpetuating our socioeconomic system.
Right.
And so, like, I think more now is less personal and it's just practical. Like, if we're looking at how do we better society, you know, for everybody. And here's the kicker that people don't know. If you make it better for Black people, and more even specifically Black trans people, you make it better for everybody.
Yes.
Because if you can realize and fully celebrate and take care of the humanity of a Black trans person, then guess what? It gets better for everybody.
Yes. It can only get better.
Better. But again, it goes back to the fact that the system is designed where people want losers.
Yeah.
Some people's definition of freedom is the ability to be able to control or oppress other people. Like, that's just human nature in some regards. And so I think now I try to, you know, promote it by, like, wherever I am, getting people to think more critically about really what's going on. Because I don't think, like I said, these are not original thoughts people, you know, have. And so, like,
it's easier to just take somebody else's ideas and spew them out instead of actually sitting down and thinking for yourself about.
And you don't realize that you're not thinking, because you think that's thinking. Well, you're pulling it out of your brain,
right? Because that's what the implicit bias thing is all about. Right, it's your brain's way of taking the easy way out, and your brain will always take
the easy way
out.
And guess who's making it easy?
Right.
Not, you know, it's certainly not, you know, it's all by design. But, like, I think it's critical to look through those lenses first and not last. I think a lot of people do their programming over, and then diversity and inclusion is this extra thing that they might be able to afford, and then they want to, like I've heard people say, like, if you're in a DEI role, you're actually in the most oppressed role in a company or an organization. And I think that that's certainly, you know, true. But, like, it's your job not to say, like, this is some little add-on program or some side thing. I think you have to look at those things first, or else you're just perpetuating the system with a little bit of sprinkle on the side.
Right.
You know? And so I think that's how I try to, you know, work to do those things. And, like, even watching TV, like, there's a show that I watch, and they had, like, the main character is autistic in the show, but, like, they didn't actually cast an autistic person.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, you don't think about that. Yeah. And maybe somebody else isn't even thinking about it, you know, and it's not that. And it's just because you're not trained to think that way. And they probably didn't intend, you know, they're probably thinking they need to get a good actor. And why not actually hire an autistic person I'm sure there's autistic people who want to be actors and actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not, because usually they don't care about pretending. So, I don't know. But, like, you can actually be more critical and inclusive, you know, from all lenses. And I, you know, try not to. And luckily I have a friend group who we all just, like, encourage each other to challenge, you know, the way we think about humanity. And so, yeah, I think, like, how do I promote it in my daily life? Through questions or critical discourse and without judgment, because, like I said, these are not original thoughts. Like, we're programmed, like, yeah.
Right. So do you, when you're in that group, do you call other people out if it is something that's, like, a canned?
I feel like I'm the one that probably gets called out more.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, Ebony, come on now. But yeah,
I do think some people do live by that. They read something or they hear something, and they just, that's what comes out of their mouth. They just, it's really easy, like I said.
And you don't, and it might not even be something you intentionally saw up there. Like, I think I saw something like the average human sees like 66,000 ads a day. Ooh. And like learning and sociology, like the ads are actually set up, and majority of ads you see, the black person is never looking directly at the camera. So they're not even worth you looking in the eyes of a print that you see.
Now you're going to make me look at it.
And it's like, not even just something you read, it's literally being programmed into you in the most insidious ways. Like, even when you look at, you know, the show Cops, or when somebody's on trial, or even like when a black person is murdered, they're really showing, they will show that person more, or like try to bring up their bad past instead of like framing the criminal as the criminal.
Right.
Like,
right.
And so, like, it's just not even in sources that we intentionally seek out or that we're like engaged in. It's insidiously being placed into us in the most, and you know, yeah.
Right. So be more cognizant of what you're doing and what you're
saying. I say it's just more conversation about, like, and asking questions. And not, you know, like, I try not to judge people about those things that they, you know, don't know. Because there's a lot of things that I don't know and I had to unlearn and, you know, relearn. Mm-hmm. But, like, being able to really, again, I say go back to looking at things first through the lens of classism, racism, sexism, ableism, elitism, and whatever other isms. Looking at them first and not last.
I think you're a real connector of people. Mm-hmm. How do you connect with people? And and I'm not just talking about from the diversity, equity, inclusion space, but of course, if you want to answer in that way, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But how do you have like a, you know, when you start talking to somebody, do you have like a recipe that you sort of follow? Because you are incredibly good at it. And you are definitely a powerhouse in the Akron area. Everybody knows Ebony Pond, right?
That's so interesting.
I do. Everybody knows you, right? If I say your name, somebody has met you along the way. Mm. And I find that incredible. So what is your secret, or how do you do that? Or do you have any plan at all? Or you just, you know, you connect. If you don't connect, you don't connect. Mm-hmm. Is it important to you? Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
One, thank you. I definitely say it's not intentional. I think it's just the way that my human is designed. Like I said, like going back, everybody is different. Everybody has strengths. And just the way my human is designed is just very natural for me. I think it, you know, going back to the value test. So creativity came up as the top value.
Right.
Second was teamwork. And that's more so like, that's accountability for me. If I'm in a team and I have something to do, like, okay, I can encourage everybody else, but then I also make sure that I play my part. And then three was fairness. And fairness came up as like fairness of outcomes, fairness of methods and procedures, and the like belief in the dignity and worth of people. And so I think just very, it's just, it's not something I have to do or think about. It's just who my essence is to, like, I think people are so special, and I think that they are so worthy and like very different. They have something to bring to the table, and it probably goes back to, so creativity was the fourth value right after that. And so you got creativity. It's creativity, and then you have teamwork, ability to work with people, and then you have fairness, believing in the dignity and worthiness of people. And then you got curiosity as the fourth value that came up. I'm just interested,
right?
You know,
right.
in people. And so I think like those are, you know, if it's the formula, it's like genuinely being interested and just thinking that people are just really awesome. And so like, and I think also like you have to blow your mind a little bit. And like, if you take away the thoughts and the words and the conclusions or descriptions or whatever, and you really get to the core of like what it means to be a human. Like when you ask people, like older people, what do they regret the most in life? Or what do they like feel like they would have could have done differently? And it's always relationships. Like relationships are way more
important.
That's
true.
And like connecting with other humans is like the most rewarding experience you can have as a human. Like that's what actually gives you in your spirit life. And so I think it's very natural. I don't think that there's a formula. I think it's natural for me. I've been told like I provide a space where people don't feel judged. I've been told that I give people permission. And so I think that's just like who I am. But if I say like why I am those things, I would probably point back to believing the dignity and worthiness of people and, you know, curiosity, just being interested.
So speaking of that, this is a quote directly from you. Oh. Let there be power in your curiosities. Don't let your fear of being stupid or being nosy or being too smart stop you. Be stupid, be nosy, be smart. It could change your life or someone else's. And I want to talk about that because you've touched on curiosity throughout this whole podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about why it's important to be curious.
I think that you already are curious. You know, like you're already curious. It's just about like giving yourself permission to be curious. Because you and I know you're curious because we don't know everything.
Right.
Like, there's no way. Even if we talk, if we like get very specific on a thing, we don't know everything in that very, 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 very specific thing. And so like there's things you don't know and like questions that naturally arise. And I think that it's important to follow your curiosities. That's what I've learned. And so like there was a podcast that I listened to and it was about game design. And it said that like the point system in a game tells you what to care about, what's value. And so I think, you know, in the education system is GPA, but that's because there's so many reporting structures that, you know, you have to be able to communicate about how a class is going. And the easiest way to simplify that is GPA.
Yeah.
But if I was thinking like, okay, well, if I designed a school, what would be the thing that we cared about? And I think the two things for me came back to curiosity and inspiration, paying attention to what inspires you, what actually fires you, excites you. What do you like really find yourself in awe of? And then also curious, like what makes you want to know more the most? And so like following those two things, you may not have to know a lot. You might have to know anything, but like what is inspiring you and what is making you curious? And I think that that's how you follow more so your design, because that's what's making your little human tick. And then it's how you create yourself. And like, I think finding a life that's more fulfilling, because going through the motions, like, hello, like we're all depressed and anxious. Like, I don't know if anybody knows that, but like, we're all at the same freaking party. Like, nobody's happy with this day to day life for real, like going through the motions. And so I think curiosity is just the expression also of the human spirit. Like, it wants to flow.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to flow. And so I think curiosity is super important. It's super important. I think getting more to like your own design, I think it's so important. It's how we create the world. Like the world is what it is now and what we see because people were curious enough to explore something.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you know, when this whole project started to create this podcast, and I was trying to figure out, you know, who could I ask? One of the things I thought about was that your nature is typically curious, but also you're kind of up for anything.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I really, you have been the most amazing host for the podcast. I am so happy with the spirit that you brought to the project, everything that you came in with, but also the way that you interacted with the hosts or the guests. Okay. I mean, and I was always curious, you know, why you decided to do it, mm-hmm. why you wanted to be a part of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted you to be a part just because of things that I saw, you know, that you were a connector and you were up for anything, and we had never done anything mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. before, you know, mm-hmm. but I was just curious why you decided to be a part of it.
So there's a couple things. One, because I really wanted to, the first season was about the 30th anniversary of the Ideas Program. And I knew how much the Ideas Program meant to me and my success. Like, yeah, I could probably cry if I really think about it, but I'm not going to. but like the Ideas Program meant a tremendous amount to me, and being able to honor it was an honor for me. Number one, Number two, like being able to talk with people. Like I love to talk with people and like learn from them. Mm-hmm. That first season, I wish I could go back and do it, because I feel like I probably could have been more present with people and I just had my own stuff going on at the time. And so sorry to the first season, but thank you so much for letting me interview you. And then like why continue to do it. And then also another reason to do it is, so I knew I didn't want to be an engineer, and I know like I graduated 2018, and in like early 2018, I was like trying to desperately figure out what I was going to do. And so I'd seen something that was like, ask people in your life what you're good at. And so I like messaged like 10 to 15 people closest to me, people who know me literally my entire life. People have met me maybe in college and I've known them for a couple years. People I probably met in grade school or middle school. Right, like right. People just...
A lot of people.
Different levels of people who have known me for a significant amount of time, but in different phases of my life. Like, what's the number one thing you think I'm good at? And like 80% of the answers came back to have something to do with communication. Listening, okay. Talking, conversation, advice, something like that. And I was just like, holy crap. Because, you know, the way you think about yourself, again, not my own probably original thoughts.
Right.
But the way you think about yourself as an engineer is like reading, writing, talking, give me the hard science and math. And right. So I thought people were going to say logical and analytical. And so I figure it must be so innate in me that I don't see it.
Right.
And how do I, like, trying to be more intentional about tapping into my gifts and trying to explore it. Like, if this is what I'm naturally good at, how can you build on what's natural for you?
Mm-hmm.
And so getting an opportunity to be able to kind of strengthen a communication skill, that was also why I jumped into it. And then when you was like, okay, well, it's actually not just going to be for the ideas program we're going to do it the next year, and this is going to be about women in engineering. And so then, you know, I joined the podcast fellowship,
right.
Like to try to strengthen the skill even more and just being more exploratory, I guess, and trying to tap into what people saw as a strength of mine. And so I'd say selfishly those are the reasons, but really not selfishly, because if that's my gift and it's like what I give that to people,
right?
So it's not, so it's how I could best be used in the world as far as I know. And then just really like loving to hear people's stories and perspectives, yeah, and talking
was
with
fun.
Them. Yeah, and learn with them. So that's why.
Yeah, that's cool. Was there anything I guess, do you feel like the Diverse Engineering Podcast was everything that you'd hoped for?
I don't think I had like something that I hoped it would be.
Okay.
I think
that's fair.
Yeah. More so just like super grateful. And I'd say the thing that I learned after season one was like, I realized like the job truly is to figure out how to be more myself. And like when I say season one, I didn't know myself. I was still trying to formulate who that was. And really, I guess I was trying to figure out how to be Black, how to be a woman, you know, all those things. And I think after the first season, I realized like, you don't have to try to be anything. This is going to work a lot better if you could figure out how to be more yourself. And so the next season, that's why I tried to practice. That was my main intention for the thing. Is like, if I can be more myself. And then by this last third season, I feel like now I'm definitely at a place where I can say, I know myself and I know who I am. I am who I am. I don't have to try to be anything. This is just what my human does, and I'm not going to judge it. Like, I didn't design myself. Like, I just am here. And so, like,
did any of the people that you talked to, anybody change your perspective?
So many people. Going through? Every interview had something where I was just like, oh, that's another. I am not afraid to learn from people. And that's also something I've learned to be better with accepting. Because it's like, I think when I was young, like, I was the right one about, like, everything. And people need to listen to me. But as I've gotten older, it's like, I don't know jack. And anytime I've ever went into a conversation thinking that I was going to be the teacher, I always learn more than what I intended to teach. And so I've definitely learned a lot, you know, from people.
So let's do a little reflecting now.
Okay, right? Reflecting. Reflecting.
Looking back at your life and in general, what are there any things that you are particularly grateful for?
So what am I most grateful for?
Feel free to use my name.
No. That would be Heidi Kressman, actually.
I'm just kidding.
I'm definitely grateful for strangers, for sure, if I want to say that. There have been so many strangers who have poured into me. And I remember going to a talk, and there was a speaker at the public library, and asking him, what's the most meaningful or significant thing that a stranger has ever done for you or that you've witnessed a stranger do? And in that moment, I was expecting some elaborate story about the lengths that another human went through for another human. And like wanted it to be this story about like giving back to other people and, you know, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And his answer was, told me to keep going. I'm like, in the moment, I'm like, what a disappointing answer. Where's this illustrious story about how someone like drove you to school so you wouldn't have to walk 5 miles a day or something, you know, like
yeah.
something like that. And then when I got home at night and reflected on it, I began to cry.
Aww.
Because I realized that is what my life has been. People telling me to keep going or pushing me in a direction or seeing something in me or trying to encourage me a certain way. And that has probably been like the most significant thing that has led to, you know, my success is someone, you know, believing in me or seeing something in me or just encouraging me.
Right.
And so I'm definitely grateful for that. And that is a privilege. And that's not something that I, you know, take for granted. I'm a person that, if you can't tell already by this podcast, is I try to give context for what's going on in humanity. Mm-hmm. And so there's something called the Pygmalion effect. It's that they did a study with a classroom, and they told the teachers that there was two groups of students. They divided them kind of like into two groups. And like these students, they gave them a list and said, these students, none of them are doing well. None of these students, all of them from the whole class, none of them are doing well. But there's a list right here that they're not doing well right now, but it's predicted that they'll turn it around and end up being good students.
Okay.
And the way that they treated the student, even though they were all sucking, you know, at the same baseline,
right.
but the ones who they were told were going to have a promising future, they were warmer to them. They were more polite with their questions. They allowed them to be stupid and curious. And the students where they weren't, they were harsher to them. They had a question like, you should know the answer to this, or very cold or short, didn't want to help them, didn't challenge them because they already didn't think that they were capable.
Right.
And so, like, what does that do to you? It affects, if somebody else thinks this way of you, you begin to adopt it into your way of thinking about yourself. And so, and if you adopt that into a way of thinking about yourself, it's going to affect the way that you act and behave, because the way you think about yourself is going to be a better predictor of your behavior or your outcomes.
Yeah.
And so when I say that it's a privilege, I certainly recognize that as a privilege, because it doesn't mean that those other students couldn't have been as successful.
Right, right.
They did not have the people to nudge them and nurture them in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which is very unfortunate, but it's not because... So, long story short, I'm grateful for that, and I recognize it as a privilege. And I'm grateful to know love and to understand that I'm loved. I think probably a while I didn't know it or didn't believe it. But, like, understanding that people love differently, and I know that if I die today, there would be people who deeply mourned my death. Not just sad, but, like, close family members who I know they would mourn me.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that, and to know, but to accept that you are loved, because you mm-hmm. are loved, you mm-hmm. know, but to accept it, I'm grateful for that. I'm very proud that I saved up enough money to be able to quit my job and explore who I was,
because
I knew I went to a networking event, somebody said, what brings you joy? And I had no freaking clue, and I was like, I'm doing life wrong. How do I not know it brings me joy?
You know, that's true.
And so I'm like, hell no, I don't want to do it life like this. Like, what the hell? I'm going through the motions for sure. And so
being able to like quit my job and to invest in my own intuition and to and be able to just find my own peace of mind, like I'm super grateful to have been able to do that.
That's cool. Okay, so when you look into your future, what will Ebony be doing? And what would you like your impact to be? And well, I think you ask everybody this question, so I'm getting you back.
Right.
For that one.
I know.
All the other podcasts or no guests answers. That we had.
I have no answers. When all is said and done, I think that I like the idea that I give people permission and I provide space where people are not judged. So I would continue in that. And just by sheer nature of me finding out more how to live in alignment with myself, that would be like what I think the future is for me. Probably more things in communication, so maybe more poetry or maybe more reflections or maybe more conversations. Yeah, just giving people more permission to be themselves and to try to help identify people's spark. I think that's also a thing that I've been told that I do. Like,
yeah, I agree. I think that's accurate.
So those things, so. Words and encouraging people to be more themselves by practicing how to be more myself.
Cool. Well, so is there anything else you want to talk about before we end?
No, just that I'm super grateful. Thank you for asking me to host the podcast, for one, and for trusting me to grow with it and evolve and be more participatory in it throughout the seasons. And for the way that you edify me, it's not something I take lightly. I definitely appreciate that.
Well, Ebony, I'm just going to speak from the heart. You have been incredible. You've been a great part of my life. I've grown a lot because of you. You've changed my perspective. I was very grateful you said yes. And I'm even more grateful now because I think it was a wonderful opportunity for me to grow and to have this experience, which, you know, I knew nothing about podcasting. I had not a clue. And I had a team of people who you were a big part of. You were a key person in this whole experience. I loved every minute of it.
Figuring it out.
Yeah. I'm sad it's ending. really sad it's ending. But I'm grateful for the work that we did together, and I'll never forget it, and I'll never forget
me
you.
Either. I truly cherish this opportunity. I'm pretty sure this is probably, like, one of the linchpins and, like, what defines, like, what I do now. Like, I like this.
Yeah, I have too. So I just wanted to say thank you for all your work, for the whole team that we had. It was incredible, and I'm sad, but it is time to say goodbye on the podcast.
It's so hard to say goodbye.
It is hard to say goodbye. But appreciate this opportunity, and I'm happy that we had the chance to work together. So on that note, I'm going to end this podcast. This is our final podcast of Diverse Engineering. For those of you who are listening and would like to contribute, all the money that we raise for this podcast goes to help students. This particular season was dedicated to graduate students and graduate students from underrepresented groups that we would like to help support. So I hope that you'll consider giving to this worthy cause. And a final farewell from Ebony and I. Ebony, you can say goodbye too.
Thank you, and until next time.
And I hope there will be a next time. So, anyway, thank you again.
Thank you.
We hope that you've enjoyed listening to this episode of Diverse Engineering. I want to thank GPD Group and Continental Contitech for their generous support of this podcast series. If you'd like to help ease the financial burden of our diverse graduate students in the College of Engineering and Polymer Science, please consider a donation. We need your help as community sponsors and listeners to support these students in any way you can. To donate, text WIE to 71777 or give online at uakron.edu/giving/WIE. Thank you to podcast host Ebony Bond, podcast editor Daniel Groen, WZIP General Manager Chris Kepler, podcast creator, Heidi Kressman, and the College of Engineering and Polymer Science for making this podcast a reality. This has been Gary Miller, president of the University of Akron. Go Zips!